The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
There's nothing like the final few days before round one. Every club starting at 0-0 and their hopes laid bare ahead of the 2019 AFL home and away season. And that means one thing, the mighty Fox Footy Podcast is back for this season as well. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth and joined by two of the sharpest minds in the Fox Footy news team in the podcast bunker at this moment. Firstly, let's welcome senior AFL reporter Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Ben, how was your summer?
I spent a lot of it next to you. So, yeah.
Well, I didn't do much WNBL.
No, but your knowledge no doubt increased.
Yeah, no, I know all about the WNBL and I think you did a sterling job, say that?
I appreciate
it was
that.
A good summer. The cricket was interesting. Mm. The BBL was entertaining and long, but I loved every second.
Did you have a day off?
Yeah, Christmas Day, I didn't do a lot.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, no, Boxing Day test was really enjoyable, I thought. A really good test match. And then the way that the Shield season has come to a climax is also, I find, as a cricket purist, very exciting. Max, I'm sure you feel the same.
More to come on the Fox Cricket Podcast. Also joining us, as he is foxsports.com.au's chief power rankings correspondent, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
I have many umbrellas that I hold up during the year, from tennis to... Sorry, just going back to Tom. For someone who hates Christmas, to have your one day off be Christmas Day was very odd.
I was just following my parents' orders. You need to be with us on this day. I would love it if we went from Christmas Eve... BBL in Hobart. I was down there for that.
Obviously, the tradition.
Glenn Maxwell hit a reverse slap for six that went out of the ground, which is a serious shot, but the Hurricanes won as they did throughout the regular season, but not during the finals. I would love to go from Christmas Eve to Boxing Day.
Right.
Yeah.
You just like to get rid of Christmas Day altogether.
I'm not a massive fan of Christmas, Ben.
The festivities.
I get a bit bored on Christmas Day. I don't know about you. I know it's the time to hang out with your family, but by 2 o'clock, I've had all my conversation and I'm ready to go and do something.
That's coming from a man who can really hold a conversation very well.
I don't know. Maybe it speaks more about me than it does about my lovely family.
Oh, well, you're like a reverse Marie Kondo. You just hate joy.
No. Don't put that on me. I'm not that cynical, but I just like the sport around that time of the year. That's what I look forward to.
Glad you emerged in one piece and you've made it to the Fox Footy Podcast for 2019. We, in the lead up to the podcast, we saw 2 weeks of the JLT community series. So we wanted to start off with something from the JLT series, that an observation in 360 style that was real and an observation that was an overreaction. Right. Of course, real and overreaction will be on AFL 360 every Tuesday night right throughout the season on Fox Footy. Tom, an observation that was real and an overreaction.
The observation that was real for me is Paddy McCartan has a brittle skull. Right. And this is not having a go at his courage or his
skull?
Talent or anything beyond that. It's just saying that when he gets glancing blows with a helmet on and gets knocked out on a semi-consistent basis, it's a real worry for his career. So to me, the observation that his career is under the pump at the moment is absolutely real.
What did you make quickly on Jonathan Brown's comments on AFL 360 about his resilience, not his courage resilience, but his resilience to take a hit going back?
Well, similar to what I'm saying, I defer to Jonathan Brown and Nick Riewoldt and these Gary Lyon and the former stars of the game for these on these matters, but I completely agree. I worry for Paddy McCartan, I worry for St Kilda, and I also worry for his family, who have absolutely no control over what's going on the footy field.
And Tommy McCartan, his brother, also had head knock issues.
I think besides mental health, I think concussion is one of the biggest issues in the game. And just like mental health, it's something we don't really understand too well. And it's also something that is interconnected with mental health. They all seem to just weave into one, and Paddy McCartan's at the very forefront of that from a concussion perspective.
What was real from the JLT series for you, Maxie?
Not a whole lot. I will say, so the Saints winning the first game and then singing the song in the rooms.
Yeah, that was strange.
Real in what way?
So it's real in that I could see that having an impact on just the feeling at the club. That clearly meant a lot to them. There's some positivity being developed there.
Who did they beat that day?
North Melbourne, I believe, over at Werribee, their traditional home.
It was a good win, but...
Look, I'm saying the on-field result means nothing. Off-field, if the club feels so good about a preseason win that they need to sing the song, clearly they needed it desperately.
Yes, they felt under the pump going into that game, which was amazing given it was, the first or second week of February. Good on them for singing the song, but if they lose 17 or 18 games this year, that's going to be brought up, just like Nick Riewoldt And other St Kilda players singing the St Kilda song in a bizarre sort of commercial a few years ago.
Yes, I do remember that.
In about 2014. And it's going to be embarrassing for them. So I don't necessarily agree with Max, but I don't disagree either, because I'm going to just wait and see how the season plays out before deciding whether that was a pivotal moment in a good way or a pivotal moment in a bad way.
It's quite a turnaround from that famous photo of them holding up the NAB Cup and with
Wizard Cup, Wizard Home Lines Cup.
Apologies.
Lenny and Grant Thomas.
Gee,
I remember
that got a lot of airtime over the airtime, I reckon, than usual. That picture.
Well, they purposely didn't smile.
Sad celebrations. It's a real good niche.
While we're with you, Max, what was so? There's a lot of overreactions during the JLT series. A lot to sift through for you. What was your number one?
Everything else.
Right.
So don't take anything from the JLT. It is irrelevant. West Coast lost to Fremantle by 50 points. Collingwood lost to GWS by some 50-odd points as well last year. They ended up making the grand final. Please do not take anything out of the JLT. Teams come in. I'm talking on-field results, on-field play. Teams come in with completely different policies, different strategies, different tactics, different load management, all of that stuff. Ignore it.
The only thing I can take from the JLT series, Max, is the bottom teams. Now, how bad do they look?
So you're talking about like a Frio that...
The Western Bulldogs.
Right, okay.
A Gold Coast, how do they look? St Kilda, I know they actually, their pressure was back in their own way. I'm not saying you take it and you go, this is where they're going to finish this year based on JLT form, but I think you can watch it and learn particular things from it, even if it's only just about certain players.
But that's exactly my point. Like, you talk about the Saints' pressure. They're doing it against a North Melbourne team that maybe doesn't care at all.
That's true.
You looked at the second week game with Port Adelaide. I forget who they play. It might have been North. That game was basically AFLX. There were no tackles laid. You know, these teams just don't care.
Minus the franchise brands.
Bruce free. Yes. My overreaction, Ben?
Yes?
The overreaction that I've got here is there should be no 6-day breaks in JLT.
That was silly, wasn't it?
Seriously.
So are you saying that that's right, or you're overreacting to that? People are overreacting to the idea of a 6-day break?
The latter. Clubs are overreacting to the significance of one 6-day break in JLT. You have 2 weeks off after the JLT. You've got a whole summer before JLT. You've got a 6-day break instead of a 7-day break. Yes, it's hot, but everyone I speak to that wants to speak off the record says that the real issue with 6-day breaks is when they're lumped onto the back of each other. When you have two, three, maybe even four in a row, or 3 out of 4 weeks. One 6-day break, seriously.
It is a bit strange when you're a side like Geelong and you're flying from WA back home and playing a game with a 6-day break.
It might be a bit strange, but let's keep it condensed.
Seems unnecessary.
Well, you've got a squad of 45 you can pick from. So
true.
So just go and select a team. And if it's a 6-day break or a 7-day break, get over it.
Was it such a big issue that, as you reported in the aftermath of it, that the AFL is considering, after receiving some feedback, of making the JLT series a 9-game JLT series instead of 18, so a 1-week JLT series?
Yeah, that was part of that's part of the considerations for the AFL, for sure. And I wouldn't mind that either. If it's I wouldn't care if it's a no-week JLT series.
Right.
Teams are already organising their own games.
Well, that's right. And that's what I would like to see. North Melbourne played against Geelong. The Scott brothers organised it. Melbourne played against Collingwood at Olympic Park.
Olympic Park Oval.
Yep. And I think that would make perfect sense. And then if the clubs could live stream it, or if it was on Fox, that would be great as well. But I think the whole idea of the JL series is now archaic, based on a night grand finals and Ansett Cups, which, for whatever reason, previous generations used to like. I've never been a fan of it.
I heavily doubt that, Thomas.
Yeah, it's not real.
Right. Sorry, do you remember the year when Geelong won the NAB Cup?
2006, no. I want to say.
I was at work with my dad. He was making the DVD of the NAB Cup Grand Final, which was a thing that was put out on shelves. And I remember being super excited.
Good afternoon, Tony.
That was the first day of success I'd ever seen at the Cats.
Yes. And then they went and had a shocking 2006
season.
But,
you know, I felt good at the time.
I would like to go into the first round of the season having not seen any team.
Well, I went to the Captain's Day recently and asked most of the captains what they thought of the ideal JLT length, if there is a JLT length, and could they play practice games or no practice games heading into round one. The only two players that said they could go in and meet at the start line was Joel Selwood and Nat Fyfe. But everyone else said that they prefer the JLT series was spot on.
So the best players.
Mm. I say I'm happy for it to not be there, but I'm also happy for it to stay at 2 weeks. I don't take a lot of notice of it anyway. So
that's because you're on holiday at the time.
Well, it's still sort of semi-cricket season, isn't it, at that time?
Before we get stuck into the real nitty-gritty and previewing the teams, we will be speaking to Western Bulldogs champion Brad Johnson a little bit later on in the podcast. But the breaking story in the past 24 hours as we record this on about Tuesday lunchtime is Jesse Hogan from the Dockers. A press release was put out by the Dockers on Monday night saying that Hogan wouldn't be available for selection against North Melbourne and potentially longer because it's indefinite at this stage due to clinical anxiety. But also in the statement, it was revealed that he was out on Saturday night and made some, quote, poor choices around alcohol consumption, end quote. That meant he missed a Sunday training session. Tom, it was an interesting statement from the Dockers, maybe a little bit clumsy according to some, and it made it pretty difficult to report on to a certain extent.
Yeah, it was mixed. Mm. And everyone's walking on eggshells here, and understandably so, because mental health is clearly a topic that you need to be very careful in how you word your opinions and what you think about the whole landscape, I guess. But I will say this, it's a chicken and the egg. Yeah. So does Jesse Hogan or any player misbehaving lead to extensive use of alcohol or drugs in other players' cases? Or is it the other way around? Do drugs and alcohol lead to misbehaving? So in this case with Jesse Hogan, what Fremantle is suggesting is anxiety, clinical anxiety, so he's been diagnosed by a trained psychologist
or
psychiatrist.
Official diagnosis.
The anxiety has led to him misbehaving.
Well, that was certainly the order in the press release.
That's right.
Wasn't it?
And look, you've got to trust the club, and you've got to trust that Jesse Hogan has serious problems, Max. But I question whether every single player or person in the world that has misbehaved has done so because of these things, these mental health issues.
Yes.
You have to be, as a human being, in my opinion, entirely responsible for yourself. And in the end, if Jesse Hogan decides to go out on Saturday night, he decides to go out on Saturday night. And there are mitigating circumstances that can perhaps excuse elements of what goes on in players' lives. But on the whole, Jesse Hogan is responsible for how he conducts himself 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right. The problem I had with it was the fact that both elements, the drinking and the mental health, were in the same statement.
Yeah, I know.
I understand that they're trying to relate them to explain it, but in the process, it just murkies the waters. And then you have people speculating on why did he do this? Where did his mental health issues come from? Which is entirely unfair to do, really. We know the sort of stuff that he's gone through, and it's just hard to talk about all of that. So the whole thing just makes it feel a bit yucky. And look, if he needs to take time away to get better, because there's a lot going on in his life, joining a new club and being hailed as the saviour of their forward line issues, I'm sure that's a lot to deal with. So he needs time to get better. Them bringing up the drinking, which was something that was clearly swirling around probably in the media as a potential story on the weekend, that's probably why they felt they needed to do it. And that made me uncomfortable. And it probably didn't help him a whole lot either, putting that out
there. The entire thing makes me uncomfortable. Every time a player comes out and says they've got mental health issues, I feel...
Well, you feel sad.
Yeah, sad, but I feel uncomfortable for the player above all else.
Okay.
Because...
In what way?
Well, if you're a banker or if you're in another walk of life, your mental well-being isn't in the public spotlight. But now, everyone is understanding that these players who come out and say they're having problems, and good on them for doing so, the ones who come out and say it. Dustin Martin's a recent example as well, who said last year he was struggling a bit. Are now seen as, I guess there's not as big a stigma as there was, but there is still a stigma around it, Ben.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And I'm not saying I don't think there should be. I think you should be completely open about these issues that you have, and they should be treated in the same way as any other illness. But there is still a stigma about the relationship between illegal drug use, about alcohol, and how it actually impacts the mental well-being of a person. And I don't know the answers. I'm not a doctor. I don't think there are clear answers. Do you?
Not at this stage. I know that from some of the players, though, is that when they do reveal their inner battles publicly, it is often quite an empowering move for them, and it's often a move that they've put a lot of thought into. I think I think Tom Boyd's example a couple of years ago when he came out through Headspace was absolutely fantastic, and went through all the media, and he did all the rounds, and it was obviously it was part of the process for him, for Tom Boyd. Different here with Hogan, because the Fremantle Football Manager has talked about and discussed and released the latest, I suppose, setback to a certain extent.
Yeah, I've got to rephrase it. I don't think there's a stigma with mental health in isolation. I think it's how mental health relates to other issues in someone's life, like alcohol and drugs. I think that is the stigma, and people don't really know how to approach it.
And we saw that sort of with the drugs issue, if we want to briefly touch on that, that happened during February.
Yep.
People suggesting there was a loophole that people were avoiding drug tests because of.
Playing the mental health card to avoid testing.
Yes.
And the
problem I have with that is that there are basically, there's a really good article by former Fox Footy employee Jack Nile.
Yes.
Explaining how the wider public wants the medical system around drug use in the AFL to be one thing, whereas it is not that. It is not. It does not really need to be a punitive thing, because what we have learned as a society in recent years is that drug use is a problem and an addiction, and it's something that you need to deal with as an illness. It's not, I've chosen to do this and therefore I should be punished and go to jail or be suspended from a footy game. So people still want to say, you use drugs, oh, you don't get to play footy because you've made a mistake. But it is part of these mental health issues, because it's a decision that at times people aren't consciously making.
From a footy perspective, the Dockers take on North Melbourne this weekend, two teams that really need a strong start to the season. How big a blow is this for the Dockers? Because you could speculate that Jesse will probably miss more than one game, but that's, you know, that's still to be confirmed as well. How big a blow is this for Fremantle, because they went out and finally got their tall forward that they'd been pushing for all decade, seemingly, and now we won't be out there for round one?
It's not season-defining. If they lose or win, I don't think it really has a massive impact on their season. If they lose badly, it probably does. But I don't suspect they will, given they're playing at home and they're playing North Melbourne. I think Jesse Hogan is a 20-possession, 3-goal player at his best. Yeah, we saw that for Melbourne, and it's exactly what Fremantle need. We'll decide at the end of the year at the end of his career, whether it was a good move or not, the Dockers chasing him. But at the moment, given the circumstances, which understandably have been outside Fremantle's control, and to a lesser extent maybe outside Jesse Hogan's control as well, given what's happening to him from a mental health perspective, it hasn't been a good start.
I was going to say, the Dockers and the Kangaroos have been two of the hardest teams to get a hold of in terms of predicting where they might finish in 2019.
I'd love to hear what Max thinks.
That leads us beautifully in to the pre-season edition of the Power Rankings, Max, for 2019, which were published.
It was a Power Rangers intro.
Yeah, I like that.
Go Power Rankings.
For foxfooty.com.au, published on Monday afternoon.
Yes.
Maxi, what stood out to you from the rankings?
Well, West Coast is fourth.
West Coast is fourth.
So,
where did you think that'd be?
So I had them first in my ballot because they are the reigning premiers, and I felt they deserved such a respect. But a lot of we get votes from a few people around the office and compile them all. And I think the prevailing view is that West Coast wasn't the best team last year. Richmond was in the home and away, and until about the first quarter of the prelim against the Pies. And so Richmond's first, in fact. And then Melbourne and Collingwood follow the Tigers. So, you know, get your Vic Fires.
I'm surprised that Melbourne are ahead of West Coast, given what transpired on preliminary final day.
But you can see the massive amounts of optimism around the Demons. A lot of people tipping them for the flag.
Yeah, but think about it.
Through.
I mean, did you have Melbourne ahead of West Coast?
No, I did not, because I had West Coast.
Of course. Did you have Melbourne ahead of West Coast, Ben?
I did.
And I do think Melbourne will finish above West Coast this year.
In the nicest possible way, it's irrational to have Melbourne above West Coast. West Coast get back Andrew Gaff. They are the reigning premiers, and they smash Melbourne on preliminary final day. And Melbourne don't have Steve May for the first round of the season either.
Dude, the Twitter people have gotten to you. You're suddenly a massive Eagles
person. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I don't see what logical reasoning you can have them ahead of Melbourne.
The logical reasoning is, by that logic, our predicted ladders should be the exact same as 2018's ladder.
No, because I'm factoring in Nick Natanui and also Andrew Gaff, more so Andrew Gaff, but also what happened on prelim final day, which was the biggest annihilation of the entire final series.
Yeah, I agree, 100% agree with that. My hunch and gut feel at the moment is that West Coast will struggle being the hunted. That's just it's a gut feeling at the moment more than anything else. Okay. I think
what makes you think that? I'm interested in that.
The shorter preseason that they would have had. Having said that, they would have had, you know, Collingwood would have had the same amount as well. I just wonder how the game style and plan of Adam Simpson with the forwards, the midfielders, and the defenders, and only picking forwards, midfielders, and defenders for their spot, how that will stack up in 2019. It might work to their benefit because of the 6-6-6 rule and how that's very much a structured positions now. I wonder, though, that maybe potential lack of flexibility might come back to bite.
Big call, Maxie.
There's a tactical argument to that, which is that West Coast's key last year was sort of they went against the grain. Mm. They had this style that worked both against what every other team was trying to do, which was the forward half intercepts and all of that stuff, and they played talls. And we thought after Richmond won the flag that talls were dead.
Yes, but this is very true.
But it turns out if you have good ones, it works. So now you've had an off-season where teams can try and target the Eagles and work against that strategy. So the next step is for Adam Simpson to either figure out if he can play the same way or if he needs to make another advancement.
What are some of the other observations from the power rankings so far?
So the top four were the preliminary finalists, and I'll say that that never happens. The inclination for everyone is to do their ladder and say, well, the prelim finalists will finish in the top four.
You mentioned this, I reckon, every year.
And it doesn't happen. It's happened twice in the last 24 seasons, which were the Collingwood Bulldogs Saints Cats era.
Yep.
And then in the Hawks Swans Cats Dockers era.
Right.
A few years
There's always
later.
One that comes out and one that drops in, it, apart from two.
On average, there is a team that jumps out of the 18 to the top four every year.
Yeah.
So that, and the popular pick, I think, this year is Adelaide. So they're fifth in the power rankings despite what happened last year. And so keep this in mind. They had all their preseason issues with the camp. They had all their injury issues during the season. They were being the hunted because they had such a successful 2017 season. Still won 12 games.
Yeah.
It's not hard to see.
I agree with that. I think Adelaide are going to be good.
I'm on the Crows.
Yeah. Their age profile is good as well.
They were the best team in 2017.
Yep, it's not the age profile. Yeah, you're right. The age profile isn't for next year or the year after. It's for now.
It is.
And I just reckon they're primed, the Crows.
But what's interesting, though, is Hawthorn's age profile is for now. They're the oldest and most experienced list in the competition. But where do they come in the power rankings?
They were outside the eight. Mm. So the teams that were to drop out, because it seems like there's a group of 12 that could really contend for the eight this year in most people's eyes. Maybe Brisbane if they make a big leap, because there were 12 teams that won 12 games. And the ones that missed were Hawthorn, North, Sydney and Port. That's probably the common consensus, I think.
I agree with that. I think Sydney just missed. I think Port missed relatively easily.
Right.
I'm not big on Port at all this year.
You're big on the Lions, though, aren't you, Tom?
Yeah, I don't think they'll make the eight, but I think they'll contend for the eight maybe until late in the year. I really like the Lions. I've got a confession. Again. I bought a Lions membership in the off-season.
Did you really?
Not because I need it. I just wanted to support the club from a financial perspective. $82, Victorian member. I just like what they're doing. And it's not going to bias my reporting in any way. But any more than it already is. I just really like the people at the club and what they're doing.
Any surprises down the bottom of the pairing?
I can't wait to see you at all those Sunday 110 games that Eddie had.
Tom will be there.
Well, he would be. Down the bottom, it's the same bottom six as we saw last time. So Gold Coast last, which sort of makes sense because Carlton had some ins and Gold Coast had
a couple of good draftees.
Yes, but...
And their best one's injured for 5 to 6 weeks.
And one of them's a tall who does not...
Two of them are talls.
Well, the one thing I took from the JLT was that the king they drafted does not look ready.
Well, there were suggestions before the draft that he didn't want to go there anyway. So I'm sure they're doing their best to assimilate him, but it's not easy when you leave your home to go and play for a football club which has 11,000 members and no success in their history.
I promise by the end of the season I'll figure out which king is where. I don't know. I honestly don't remember right now.
I'm trying to think of an alliteration that will help at this stage, but Ben's definitely at Gold Coast and Max is at St Kilda.
My name, so that helps.
Yes, Max is at St Kilda. Max is local Victoria.
You love being on the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing the power rankings after round one and how they change.
That's when they get interesting is the massive swings that we see. Everyone's sort of on the same page going into this season. There's a lot of consensus about who's going to be good and who's not.
Yeah.
Speaking of highly anticipated, no segment has been more highly anticipated throughout the summer. It's been too long, Tom. It's now time for the return of Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
Da, 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 da. Fair or Farce.
Oh, Jesus.
Ben.
It's getting worse.
Fair or Farce. Mm. AFLX was a success this year.
Yeah, fair. Fair. So the caveat is, because this was targeted at kids, and I just wish people would realise that this was a target at children. However, the other caveat is that I really like what Max wrote for foxfooty.com.au. Is that the purpose of AFLX must have totally changed, because last year we were being sold this is the game that we can send overseas to grow the game internationally, and now we've gone back to try and engage with the kids a little bit more. That was probably what confused me. But if it was
why can't it be both?
I know.
Because which group of kids in Shanghai, after watching Port Adelaide thump St Kilda this year, are going to go, let's go play AFLX on this soccer field that the chairman has made for us? oh, look, we have to assign a Gatorade game changer.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying with the Gatorade game changer. I thought that was ridiculous.
Well, we've got the drop zone and the super goal.
Surely
it
is entirely plausible to appeal to kids in Australia and create a game that will be able to be played overseas.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah, so
it just wasn't sold. Like, it was sold like that last year, and yes, it wasn't sold like that this year.
Yeah, the AFL's had a few issues. Yeah. I think it should be played at Amy Park, for what it's worth.
I think there's some whispers going around that that's gaining a lot of momentum for next year.
It's like we have a rectangular stadium in Melbourne and could use
it. They could hold 25,000 people.
That sounds perfect.
Any A-League venue you want, Central Coast Mariners ground, whatever that's called.
With the
Gosford
sauce,
Park.
The sauce bottles.
Play it anywhere you want. Just play it on a soccer oval.
Now, if you hit the sauce bottles, it's worth 26 points.
Oh, my God.
So what about with the Gatorade game changer?
Oh, 52. Wow.
Really excellent.
Max.
Hi.
The coaches only want the best for their clubs and not the game, fair or farce?
Fair, because that's their job to do so. If they're doing anything else, they're not doing their job correctly.
I'm alluding to the runner, clearly, because
yes,
they all want the runner and the game doesn't want the runner. So who's right?
Both can be right at the same time. Both can be wrong at the same time because they're coming from different perspectives.
Okay.
Good. And Brad Johnson's got an interesting view on that. He will be talking to him very soon on the podcast.
Who am I going? Ben, your guy.
Yes, yes.
All the clubs should wear a novelty jumper once a year with the proceeds going to charity, just like the Bulldogs. Fair or farce?
Yeah, fair. So
Maxie
might have a different view. I don't know how Maxie feels about the Thor jumper, Western Bulldogs. Someone like Caroline Wilson on Footy Classified was very much up in arms about it last night. But it's a one-off. It's one game. If it's going to a good cause as well, let it happen. And the Bulldogs have got the Thor theme jumper for round one. It's happened for one night, and apparently the Dogs are getting some good merchandise sales out of it, so more power to them.
Yeah, well, people are idiots, Ben. Of course it's selling
Yeah,
well.
I do know that. We need something to be outraged about. And so good, that was good timing.
The problem I have with the Dogs doing it, remember their banner at the 2016 prelim?
Nope.
That they were born in blood and sweat, not in focus groups, as compared to GWS?
Yes, the Danny McGinley banner, yes.
They're very much a salt-of-the-earth club. Yeah, we're for the people and all of this stuff.
And that's what that was Bob Murphy's point on AFL 360 last week.
It really does go against that whole vibe.
Mm. Yeah.
That was the dichotomy that really struck me.
I just fundamentally don't really care what jumper they wear.
Honestly, neither do I.
As long as there's no jumper clash with the opposition, then...
Well, and that's why the Swans will wear a different jumper as well in round one.
Yeah, that was the stupid part of that, the red back.
But I hate the argument that people compare it to sports around the world. Oh, English Premier League clubs wear different shirts, have three strips in the English Premier League,
yeah,
which
that's
they do.
Stupid too.
But they can do that, but we're in Australia.
Wouldn't it be a radical AFL idea without comparing to sports around the world?
Yeah, it wouldn't be. Oh, NFL does this.
Oh, entertainment.
Whose go is it?
It's Max's go.
Max's go.
Hi.
Max, hi. Fair or farce? Fremantle has a cultural problem that Ross Lyon has helped fester.
Oh, what?
Thanks for that. Farce, because I do not know enough to speak about that with any knowledge whatsoever, Tom, and I do not want to get fired.
That's real salacious.
Well, I look at who they've picked up, Ben. Harley Bunnell.
Yes.
Cam McCarthy. And now Jesse Hogan, who we know is going through some issues for himself. We've spoken about that. But Harley Bunnell has been an unmitigated disaster, and it's remarkably still on the list.
And
yes,
and quite emphatic, Ross was a couple of weeks ago in the Western Australian saying, we will support Harley right until the very end.
And, as they should.
And the reason they picked up Jesse Hogan, I believe, is because they now acknowledge that Cam McCarthy isn't quite the player they thought he was going to be when he was at the Giants.
No, but can I make the counter-argument to that? So they're a club that was, at the time they recruited all of those players, except maybe Bunnell, I forget which year it was, down the bottom.
Yes.
They're trying to solve issues. These are all WA players, the feeling being we can help solve their issues by bringing them home, but because perhaps by being away, it's only making them worse. So perhaps these players may have other off-field issues to be concerned with, but they are trying to help them by bringing them in, and they're looking at it from a list management point of view. They are undervalued because we can give them something that only one other club, West Coast, can.
They're playing some money ball, but it hasn't worked, and Ross Lyon's under the pump as a result. Ben, your go.
Yes.
And then Max has got one more. Sorry, it's an improper fraction today.
Quite
Ben,
right.
Fair or farce, Gold Coast has the weakest AFL list assembled since university in the VFL.
University. That's a cheap shot at the 1910s club. Oh. 1910s, 1920s?
Yeah, no, 10s, I think.
They didn't win many games, university.
No, they didn't.
They won some games. They beat St Kilda a couple of times, I think.
Well, St Kilda were pretty bad back then too.
I would say farce. I can't say off the top of my head who would be worse, but I think the Suns have enough young talent that they have the potential to win four games. this season. I'm so disappointed. I want to say now that I'm number one ticket holder of the Isaac Rankin fan club. When he gets going,
you've seen a lot of him.
If he gets going at AFL level, he's going to be a big once in a generation kind of player. Like, he's so exciting.
I agree with you on all of the above. He's also a teenager at the moment.
Yeah, I know.
So you've got to wait.
If he gets going,
Carlton won two games last year.
Yep.
You're saying Gold Coast is going to be double as good as what Carlton was last year.
They have the potential to do that.
They won four games last year and were terrible.
Yeah, but they're worse.
Really, the difference
between Steve May.
The difference between two and four games is very little.
It's two wins.
Correct. It's also two fluky results. Think about that St Kilda Gold Coast game. That was tight. Gold Coast could have been on fire.
They should have won that game.
Yeah. I think the Suns had the potential to beat Carlton, St Kilda, the Bulldogs, and potentially Fremantle as well.
All right. And I'll also say just
go buy a Suns membership then.
Potentially might.
You guys just love Queensland. Yeah. That's the point about having the worst list since university. I'd wager that Gold Coast is a better list than every club previous to 1970. Just based on the advancements in sports science.
Yeah, no, but it's relative.
Like, if you transported the entire 2019 Gold Coast Suns in a time machine back to the 1969 season, they would possibly go undefeated.
Let's go. Okay.
I think we tried the premiership.
I almost can't argue with that. I don't really know where to start. Max, you're going now. And a nice one for you to finish. Fair or fast?
Good.
You, Max Lawton, will miss Sandy Roberts more than anyone else has ever missed anyone in the history of anything.
Is he listening?
I don't know. Does he like podcasts? You'll miss him though, won't you?
I'll miss him a lot. He's a very, very good man.
Why did you grow so close to him in the Fox Footy office?
Because my job before working on the website was on the TV side, helping out with the ticker you see at the bottom of the screen on Friday nights, Saturdays and stuff like that. And I would come up with little stats. I'd browse AFL tables and see what's going on and give him that. And he knew my dad as well, because he used to work at Channel 7. So did my dad. So we had that prior relationship. I probably met him as a kid at one point.
Did you catch up for coffee?
No. Because he leaves 2 seconds after he goes off air every time. So I couldn't even say goodbye to him if I wanted to. But he's a lovely, lovely man. I think everyone in the office would say the same thing.
Well, every time he come to the office, you could just feel the warmth in the office just go to another level. There's a special open mic, a one-hour edition of open mic with Sandy Roberts, with Mike Sheen, Tuesday night at 8:30 p.m. after AFL 360.
Speaking of commentary, Ben, I thought your JLT commentary was terrific, alongside your WNBL work over the summer.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that.
I've just got one issue I'd like to point out to you.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
How many times can you use the same gag? Party pooper.
Oh, twice.
Now, you used it last year.
Twice, yes.
And it was spot on last year.
Yes.
Collingwood were the party poopers.
Yes.
This year.
It was exactly the same thing.
They're also the party poopers.
Yes.
You've become a deja vu relic of yourself.
Not sure.
Old man with your relics. He's a new BT, basically.
I think you're a terrific caller, Ben, but you need to extend your vocabulary.
Just for the same team with the same kind of...
Find another way to say party pooper.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Haven't you ever heard the saying, who would have thought the sequel would be as good as the original?
I have heard that, actually.
Yeah, on commentary.
Yeah, on commentary. No, well done over the summer.
Oh, no, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
I just had to bring that up.
Here on the Fox Footy podcast.
It's our leading team's feedback session.
Yes, it is. We are in a round table as well, so it really would make sense. But time to look ahead to the 2019 AFL season, and a man who will be fronting the Fox Footy coverage, as he has done for many years now, via Saturday Stretch and on broadcast as well, is the Western Bulldogs games record holder, Brad Johnson, and he joins us on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello, Jono.
G'day, Benny. G'day, Tom. G'day, Max. How are you going?
Good, Jono. Yourself?
Going really well, thank you. I think we're all pretty well lead up to the home and away season starting Thursday night. It's been a big summer, of course, and we've been trying to adapt to a number of things over the JLT series, but I think we're all set to go. It's going to be an exciting season.
Before we sort of look ahead and talk about some of the specifics of the teams and their predicaments, what did you make of the JLT series, in particular the 9 rule changes that were introduced? What stood out to you among the rule changes that might excite you or might have you questioning a few things ahead of the home and away season?
Yeah, I think overall it was pretty good. I think the fact that there's only the 2 games means you've got more experienced type teams that are out in the park consistently. So the games themselves were a really good build up to the season proper. And look, among the rules, look, the 666 I think worked really well. I think it seemed to tend to open the game up a little bit. I think clubs will adjust to things with it, especially around centre bounce, of course, being a little bit more defensive. They seem to lose their sweeper a lot and get scored out the front end of the contest. The wings just sort of held their ground instead of sweeping around to assist a little bit more. So I think that'll evolve over the season so that it can be a little bit more difficult for sides to get out the front of that stoppage. And I think from it too, I think now no more warnings. You know, you've got to pay the price as a player. They've had their chance to practice it. They've been, they know exactly what it's about. If you step outside any of those zones, free kick straight away, we move on. But the players have got to start to take some responsibility for their actions out there. And playoff from full back, I thought was pretty good. I think that'll continue to evolve and clubs will try different things as they get more confident with that. The extra 50-metre penalty, well, you know, 100 metres is a fair punishment, isn't it, guys? But we've always got to continue to go back to the source as to the infringement. And it comes back to the players again. You infringe, then you've made the mistake, you cost the side 50. If you make the second mistake by not understanding the rule now, then that's your responsibility. You've got to always go back to why we're in the situation. We're in it because the player made a silly mistake and either hit someone late or got into the wrong place at the wrong time in terms of on the mark. So players have got a lot to think about. I know it's pretty tough already, but they're probably the main ones for me.
Players have got a lot to think about now as well because they won't have access to runners via the coaches during regular games because of restrictions that have been clamped down on the runners. What do you make of the runner restrictions, and do you have a potential solution? Because it seems that Alistair Clarkson and a couple of the other coaches believe that there still might be some wiggle room, or there might not be much clarity around the runner restrictions.
Yeah, I think overall, Benny, it was it didn't sort of notice it really too much in commentary. So from a club level, they're the ones that are dealing with it. It was good actually to see the game without, you know, runner standing in the middle of the ground. When you get that behind the goal vision and you see a runner standing at centre half back waiting to get out of the way or deliver that message before he can get off the ground. So I like it in that sense because visually you're not just seeing the pink outfit just guarding up some space waiting to deliver the message from the coach. I don't understand why, though, the runners can't actually just get along the boundary line, stay outside the field of play,
right. But
work the bench side of the ground. So if they need to go down to defensive 50, they just sort of jog their way down there. They find the player that they need to, or they've got the closest player that they can say, go and say, tell so-and-so this, or there's a minute left in the game. They're the sort of things that, you know, the coaches are looking to get out there, or even to go congratulate a player for doing something well. A young player goes back with the flight. As a coach, you want to be able to tell him that instantly. So, and the players, his teammates do, but a player loves to get the message from the coach to know that you've done something well also. So I don't see why they wouldn't be able to just access along the bench side of the ground and walk between the benches, but once they clear that area, they can jog down to where they need to deliver that message. They're out of the way, they're not in anyone's way, they're not blocking any space or anything like that, but they can still get a message at times to the particular players they need to.
Very interesting, Jono. Are you all, and I want to talk to you about the footy, and more specific, the Western Bulldogs. Are you at all concerned about the Dogs, given they lost to Gold Coast and St Kilda in the pre-season?
Are you worried about the Dogs, Tommy?
Yes, but I'm not the former champion of the game, so it doesn't really matter whether I'm worried. I'm asking, are you worried?
No, I am actually. I'm a bit concerned with what I saw throughout the JLT, and you know, losing the games they did, and St Kilda were a lot tougher than the Dogs around the ball. They physically put it to the Bulldogs, and that's hopefully a big wake up call for them as a club in terms of what they need to turn around themselves. But for me, it just, their game style just doesn't seem to be able to stack up to where footy is going at the moment. I think Luke Beveridge needs to potentially make a lot of changes off the back of what we saw throughout the JLT, because you've got a lot of guys that win a lot of football. McRae, Hunter, Wallace, Libba, McLean, they're all winning 30 to 40 disposals per game. But a lot of their ball is handball. A lot of it is back out of congestion, and then they continue to go back 1, 2, 3 before they even look at going forward. So they always have more handballs than kicks. And McLean's the one for me, because his two JLT games were 3 kicks, 16 handballs, 3 kicks, 15 handballs. So he's not a handball player. He's a type of player that we've known that, you know, he's forward of centre, that's creative by foot, sets up goals, kicks goals. So his game, I think, is something that needs to be adjusted significantly for him to have a real impact this year. Hayden Crozier, at least that's one player there, boys, that does kick the ball. So I think there's a lot for the Dogs to work on, especially if they get corridor ball. They seem to push it really wide and not go forward when there is time and space to do that. So it's pretty significant. I know you boys play Super Coach. I'd check my side with Dogs players because they'll rack up points. But in terms of the way the game's played, I think they need to have a huge adjustment, especially through the midfield.
And how much of an asterisk do you place next to the Bulldogs because they are so young? Or is that ship sailed based on what we saw last year?
Oh, look, the Dogs, go back to 2016, Tommy, and, you know, they finished seventh and they win the flag from seventh. For me, it was a progression from seventh. And then I didn't actually really expect them to win the flag over the last 2 years. But to go from seventh, maintain seventh, maybe become a top four side last year. And then you start to grow towards a flag over this year, next year, or the following year. And that's how it evolves these days. But for the Bulldogs to go from seventh now back to the the bottom six in the competition and look like they're going to stay there, that's the concerning shift for me. And I understand they're young, and yes, they've lost some players along the way, and they've lost some premiership players over the last couple of years for whatever reason as well. So, you know, that adjustment has been made by the decisions for these players to move on. And reality is now it's going to be another long build for them. And to win a flag in 2016 and not play final for 2 years and potentially a third year now for the Bulldogs, then, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. It's not good enough from where they were in 2016.
Well, Jono, speaking of the bottom six, I want to take you back to late October, the final edition of the trade lowdown for the trade period. You and Nick Del Santo chatting about all the teams, and one really stood out for a lot of people. Your suggestion that Hawthorn would finish 15th.
We couldn't believe it on set, Max. We were in shock.
I think Nick Del said 14th as well, so I'm going to
you're the low man on him
here as well. Look, it's
has your view
off.
Changed, Jono?
Yeah.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't, guys. And I suppose the couple of injuries that they have now, is, and you don't wish that upon anyone, but it was made with knowing the fact that these guys were going to play. They traded in pretty well. Scully, we're unsure of. Wingard, obviously, a gun, and I rate him really highly. So it would have adjusted a little bit if those guys had been fit and set to play because around that time, but not too much. So their final series, you could see they were a fair gap between them and the next best. And I just thought with losing Burton and the way that was sort of handled and just their playing group wasn't up to it. Tougher draw, meaning they weren't going to win enough games, so they were going to finish in the bottom part of the ladder. So that's the adjustment I think that'll happen for Hawthorn. And then from there, we know that, with these players they do have from 2020 onwards, when they do start to hopefully get some consistency with them and out on a regular basis and Mitchell back, then the growth will start to come again for Hawthorn.
Well, I'll just give you one little fact that might sort of back up your argument. I've looked at every team that went out in straight sets in the finals under this finals format. So yes, since 2000, every team has either finished first the next year on the home and away ladder or missed the finals entirely. Yes. There are two options.
Well, they're not going to finish first, are they?
So there you go. That's how it seems to be playing out.
See, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Backing you up.
Pulling that out. I'm going to use that all year now, Max.
Jono, just before we let you go, we need to get a premiership tip off you heading into the home and away season. Who takes your fancy to take the cup home?
Melbourne take my fancy. Mm. I think with the inclusion of Stephen May down back, I think Tom McDonald, I think, will have a super year as the probably the power forward, the number one forward they've got there. He's got the ability to kick 60 plus this year with the way he finished off the season last year. So I think, through the midfield, they're tough and strong. They've got class in there. Max Gawn probably win the Brownlow. I hope he does anyway. I love the way he plays his footy. He's a good guy to go with it. So, and he always gives us plenty on Fox footy. So I think Melbourne, I think they're just the ones that have bubbled along for a while. They've built well from Roosie through to what Simon Goodwin's doing now, and they've been patient, and this is their time to shine.
Well, they do have a fantastic opportunity to get their campaign off to a great start this Saturday against Port Adelaide, which you can catch live on Fox Footy. Jono, you'll be working the Friday night game. Look at the Fox Footy roster here, the Collingwood and Geelong game, and then also
be.
And then you've also got the Suns and the Saints at Marvel Stadium on Sunday. In the middle of that sandwich is the new look Saturday stretch of a familiar face joining the team.
We do. I can't wait actually to work with Sarah Ollie. We had one opportunity last year, and she swore extremely well, and she dropped a little bomb on air, and it was. You know what? What I love about Sarah is the fact that, you know, she can be serious when she needs to, but she can also have a laugh and hang out as well. So, you know, myself and Dermy don't mind having a bit of a laugh. And it's the end of a Saturday, so everyone's had a big Saturday. They've watched their team. They want to, you know, see the highlights at the end of the day, see who played well. And then we got all the players of the day to think, because all that'll be back also this year in a couple of new segments. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Kickstart Saturday night, boys. It's going to be a great year.
And you'll be guiding the ship as smoothly as ever. Brad Johnson, appreciate your time on the Fox Footy podcast. All the best for round one.
Good on you, boys. Enjoy this week.
Thanks very much to Western Bulldogs great Brad Johnson. Some interesting thoughts there on the runners working along the boundary line, you know, to try and deliver messages. But he was also very strong on his old side as well there.
Yeah, I can't imagine the runner going along the boundary line like the NFL coach mover, whatever his name
is. Oh, the guy who protects the coach from running onto the field.
I mean, very interesting points, but I don't know. I care about the runner and how much time the runner spends on the field slightly more than the Western Bulldogs jumper. They're both negligible. I really liked his comments about the Western Bulldogs and how he thinks they're going to go this year and why he's a bit worried.
I'm very concerned. Yeah. I very much liked a tweet I saw during the week, which is that Dale Morris saw that Bevo wanted to play Aaron Norton forward and did the team thing and got himself injured to force him to play him in defence.
Now, speaking of tweeting and feedback, we've opened up the feedback mailbag this year.
What a poor decision,
Maxie. So we could be in for some interesting questions, but you're taking control of the mailbag for the Fox Footy podcast.
Yes, we love the people. We love hearing your feedback. So if you have a question for us each week, we'll try and answer the best of them. Tweet at Fox Footy, hashtag Fox Footy podcast.
Yes. At Max Lawton.
Just directly at me. DM me. Slide in there, and I'll love to hear what you have to say.
Did you get a few slide-ins over the summer, Max?
Absolutely not, no. Okay. They're open, though.
Far less than you, Tom.
No.
He's a loyal man. We know this about him.
He's a very loyal man.
Speaking of loyal, our first question comes in from Adam McGuinness, who asks, are Brisbane going to be the best to watch again this year, Tom?
Yes, they are. They play Brisbane and Melbourne, I think, at their best are going to be the best to watch. I think Melbourne at their best are just going to be unbelievable. But
unexpected answer?
The Lions just play with this panache and this bravery and boldness. Panache. Yeah, there's another word for you,
yeah,
Ben.
Like that.
but it doesn't replace party poopers. Yeah,
it's just like the P. I really like the way the Lions are setting up, and they're going to lose some games because they're just still quite young. But I think something about them makes them aesthetically pleasing to watch.
Also, given their issues with getting a sponsor, I think that $82 you've supplied them will be a big boon to the coffers.
I'm sure it will be, yeah.
It'll be really important. Yep. AFLW was a big issue this
week.
Yes, it was. We do need to cover that because this is a footy podcast, not an AFL podcast. From Kia McDougall, how do we see the AFLW conferences realigning after this season? Shouldn't scrap it unless the season extends to at least 10 to 12 rounds. And speaking of which, what are feasible ways to extend the season, given the timing issues and the player obligations to state leagues?
I'm happy to send this back your way, Maxie, because you're all on top of the conference system. Did a really good piece on Sunday night for foxfooty.com.au. But I think the conference system was brought in with the intention of the expanded competition in the first place. When we do go to 14 teams, it just simply hasn't worked with the 10 teams this year. You can understand the logic behind it, but clearly when you married up the two teams, or the two conferences and the 10 teams, even in October when the AFL said that we're doing this, and they've constantly kept going back to October saying we decided back then.
I think we broke it last August, from memory.
You could see the differential in quality between the two sides, because the lists were basically summed up by then. There was, you know, a little bit of drafting, but we kind of knew that, you know, Geelong, Nina Morrison was going to Geelong, and the Cats are going to pick up all those young players as well. So you could kind of see where this was heading, Maxie.
Yeah, and it's been an unmitigated disaster, of course. I think you could have done some work to say that, well, North Melbourne's going to be a better team. That's probably not put them in the conference that does look better. You wouldn't have expected GWS and Brisbane to be in bad as they were, and you maybe wouldn't have expected Adelaide and Fremantle to be as good as they were. These things were kind of foreseeable is an issue. And next year, I don't know what they're going to do because we got up to 14 teams.
Yep. Which is ridiculous.
Yep.
In terms of early expansion.
It shouldn't have gone to 10 this year.
It should have been 8 teams for another 5 years.
Unless you can play everyone once, which is what AFL football is, then you keep it the same, I think.
Yes, and that's going to be the issue because you either have to do 6 games and keep everyone playing teams in their 7-team conferences, or you need to pick one or two rivals from the other conference that you play, then that just adds more variability. Or you have to go to a full 13-game season.
The problem is the AFL has listened to the clubs who don't have teams, St Kilda and
Hawthorn,
and they've been complaining, we need a team, this is part of our club. the AFL should say, no, the game's not ready for it yet, for two reasons. One, because the depth of talent isn't there. Mm. And two, and probably more importantly, because the integrity of the league can't sustain that sort of formation.
Yes.
And we're just going to keep it the same until further notice. Sorry, Richmond. Sorry, Hawthorn, sorry St Kilda, sorry to the other clubs.
We saw with North Melbourne coming in, they ruined Collingwood season by their recruiting spree. That's only going to happen more, particularly for
Brisbane.
Brisbane and Frio. So it, I believe it was reported yesterday that the details of how many players are going to go from each team, up to 8 from both Frio and Brisbane, because they're having their in-state rivals come in. Those teams are going to be decimated. Mm. And you understand it because you have to play by these specific state pools and you're not expecting players to move into state for such a short season. But all of that is just going to make it so, so messy.
Yep.
It's a
debacle, Ben.
Not great. Two more.
Yes.
One from Matty P, who asks...
Matty or Matty?
Matty.
Yep.
M-A-T-T-Y. Mm. Write that down. You'll chat to him later. Are Gold Coast closer to a flag than St Kilda?
No.
Why do you say that?
Because Gold Coast are further away than all 17 clubs to a flag. For two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, because their list is the worst since university. No, but in all seriousness, two, because... they are just further away from a flag. I don't know how else to describe it. I think St Kilda's a long way away from a flag, but I think it's like saying, oh, geez, Neptune's a long way away. I don't know, but Pluto's further away than Neptune.
However, Pluto's still a planet.
However far you think St Kilda is away, and you might be able to say 10 or 15 or 20 years, Gold Coast is further away.
No, I like that comparison because Gold Coast being Pluto, it's like saying they're not really an AFL team with their list.
That's what I thought.
It takes 42 years to get to Pluto. Really? If it takes 42 years for Gold Coast to win a flag, then I'll be shocked as well. I think
took Hawthorn a long time to win the flag.
It's
as Tony Cochran said on AFL 360.
Which of the current Gold Coast players are going to be playing in a premiership for the Gold Coast? The answer is, I think, zero. Yeah. It's not going to happen in the next 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, because Rankin and them are going to move.
Well, maybe, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next 10 years anyway. So much relies on all the other money that the club can generate. I know there's a soft cap to create a good environment and a successful environment for the players to succeed. And I'm not just talking about weights coaches and physios. I'm talking about little things around the club and high performance camps and all things. And the Gold Coast simply just can't afford that. Not through complete fault of themselves, but because the AFL has set it up there. I think Gold Coast is a long way away, Ben.
So based on that, you would hate the idea of 19th and 20th teams, as Peter Gordon was?
No, I don't mind the idea of a 19th and 20th team, because then I believe the competition could have proper integrity and have a 19 or 20 round season.
Okay.
And have a team in Tassie. I don't mind, and Tassie's a footy state, so I actually don't mind 19th and 20th teams.
Even though Tassie's going to have the same financial issues as Gold Coast?
Well, I don't mind, I actually don't mind Gold Coast having a club.
Yes.
I just think Gold Coast and also the AFL has done it completely terribly, and now it's a basket case. And I feel sorry for the people there at the moment that are trying to pick up the pieces.
Where would you put the 20th team?
Peter Gordon suggested a third team in either Adelaide or in Perth.
See, I feel like that's like with kids. You know, when you have like two kids, it's like the perfect amount. Like you go on a holiday, you know, you don't have to put someone in the middle seat as a third kid. If you're on a roller coaster, you can go two by two. You don't have to leave someone behind. Three teams in a city just makes it a bit awkward. You get a middle child.
Yeah, I don't know where you'd put the third team.
Gee, there'd be a bidding battle between Adelaide and they'd be fighting hard both states.
What about Canberra?
Nah.
What's wrong with that?
I don't want to go to Canberra.
You love going there for the cricket.
I like watching the question time.
Governors, generals.
You like watching question time.
I do, actually.
Oh, excellent.
That's Fraser Anning speaking.
Thank well, he wouldn't be in question time, Tom, because he's
sorry.
The...
I understand. Yeah. Sorry, I just corrected myself.
Well played, Tom.
Yeah.
Any other mailbag questions?
The member for Melbourne. one more.
Oh, yes.
This is a question directed at Tom. Mm. It's from James
Beard. Kooyong, actually. But yeah.
Well, I'm not quite in the area to vote you out. My question is just, can you, Tom Morris, please just say on air how good West Coast was last year?
Would you like me to field this one, Ben?
Tom, the ball is in your court.
What's his name, sorry?
James.
James. West Coast were unbelievable last year. Not only that, I was wrong. The Eagles...
Wow.
The Eagles had an incredible last Saturday in September, or was it 1st of October, whatever the date was. They deserved their premiership. They proved me wrong, and I was happy to be proven wrong because they played such attractive football with such terrific players, such a well-balanced and open coach, and their club deserves all the success they got last year. But I don't think they're winning the flag this year.
Are there any more difficult three words to say for a media performer than I was wrong?
No,
I actually don't mind. I mean,
doesn't matter if you're right.
I mean, when Gaff and Nat Nui were out, I thought it was actually a safe bet that West Coast weren't going
to
win the flag.
Look, there's a logic to it. West Coast fans will say, we'll still win it. But you can certainly see the logic from an external perspective.
They've lost the Brownlow Medal favourite or fancy, and they've lost the most talented
ruckman.
And influential ruckman in the competition. And I'm saying they're not going to win the flag. And I'm getting heat from Eagles supporters saying, that how can you, and abuse and swear words. And I'm going, well, I'm just looking at the two players they've lost and how can they possibly do it? But they were awesome. And yes, I was wrong. And I was actually happy to be wrong because it was an awesome grand final.
It was an awesome grand final. I think David King is going to explain that, just how awesome it was on AFL 360 on Wednesday night. He's got some footage that he's talking up a lot.
I look forward to that. Yes. Just, I will say one more thing. Some people think journalists have personal vendettas against clubs. They're partially right. I had a personal vendetta against Adelaide last year. I thought they handled that training camp saga terribly. I've got no personal vendetta against West Coast last year or now. I just didn't think they were going to win the flag, and they did. So
you weren't
kudos
the only
to them.
You weren't the only one who didn't think they were going to win the flag.
That's not what he said off air, though. the amount of swearing.
Dangerous, dangerous areas. Let's get into the tips and the return of the cups for 2019. Ooh. Round one commences on Thursday night at the MCG with traditional rivals Carlton and Richmond taking on each other for the Andrew Collins Cup, Tom.
Richmond?
Well, Carlton, no.
Should it be the season opener, this game?
No,
we talk about this time every year. Should it be?
At some point, Carlton will be okay again, you would think?
Yeah, but the two big clubs playing each other at the MCG, I mean, you're going to have the non-negotiable is, I think, you have to have two big Victorian clubs playing together at the playing against
very
each other
big
at MCG.
I can't believe
that. Well, that's where the interest is.
Oh, is it really?
Well, no, in terms of numbers, viewership numbers. I'm talking about the commercial side of things.
So you don't think an Port Adelaide Thursday night game would get the same kind
Now,
of...
you've got me here. Yes, I think it would. So I'd be open to a showdown, but not a derby.
I think you could put almost any game with MCG tenants in that slot and get 90,000 because it's the first game of the season, though. So Carlton Richmond works in that way because, Carlton's going to be terrible this year, but we're still going to get a massive crowd, and that's a banked number for the AFL financially.
You can see why they keep it the same.
Collingwood and Geelong on Friday night, that game could have easily opened the season, but they're playing on Friday night for the time-honoured Carl Steinfurt Club.
Good facial hair, Carl Steinfurt, a bit like you, Maxie. I'm going for Collingwood.
Similar players.
I had to think about it a bit. I feel like Geelong are going to have a bit of a point to prove.
This is a tough game. This is a tough game to tip. Everyone wants to...
Wait, which long straight sets? No, straight set.
Straight set, yeah. Out in the first game.
Yes.
And in very convincing style from a Melbourne perspective as well.
It was at the MCG, so there you go.
Looking forward to seeing the new look Geelong lineup as well.
Yes.
Maxie.
There's Sava Radigalia getting in there.
Potentially up to four debutants for round one as well.
Yeah, I saw that from Sam Landsberger. Yeah, interesting.
This is exactly the type of game that Geelong wins and then still finishes seventh and is not a real flag contender all year.
There is always a game in round one that you look back at the end of the year and go, how did that result happen?
Total outlier.
And I wonder if it could be this one.
Gold Coast North last year would have been the one, played in that swamp.
Yes. That was called the game off. Steve Hocking was watching his phone on the boundary line.
Disappointing. I'll say the Pies, not with a lot of conviction.
Yeah.
The Matthew Bishop Cup on Saturday afternoon. Famous Melbourne one. Against Port Adelaide.
Matthew Bishop. Yeah, did Peter Walsh play for Port Adelaide in Melbourne as well?
Of course
Whopper.
He did, yeah.
That was his nickname. I'm going for Melbourne.
No, I thought you were just naming burgers. Yeah. Like, what?
Or other things. I'm going for Melbourne.
I'm also going to tip the Melbourne Demons, Tom.
St Kilda and Gold Coast are the blockbuster for the Andrew McWalter Cup. Now doing some good work at coaching, I think, at Richmond, assistant coaching at Richmond.
Yep. St Kilda are going to win this. And it's the only game I'm basing off some JLT form. I think they actually showed something.
This is the ultimate Sunday 1-10 game, by the way.
It really is.
How bad would it be if St Kilda lost?
It would be bad.
Because their first nine games, they have a really, really difficult draw, and this is clearly their easiest game.
And for Gold Coast as well, think about it. Their first four games are against the four teams that finished 14th to 18th last year.
Yeah.
The other ones.
It's a good opportunity for the Suns.
They need to win one or two in the first month, otherwise they are potentially going winless. I'll tip the
University
Saints.
Areas.
There's a breaking news. The Melbourne Demons coach Simon Goodwin has re-signed with the club until the end of the 2022 season. So we forecasted on the couch. Yes. An announcement was imminent, and it's come today. That's why they weren't answering my calls yesterday.
Good work from you, Thomas. Always on the ball. Let's head to a big game on Saturday. Hawthorn v Adelaide for the Darren Jarman Cup. One of the greats, Darren Jarman.
Yeah, I didn't know who to select here, but I watched a bit of Hawthorn in the JLT, and I've also listened to Brad Johnson talking to us. And I'm going for Adelaide here. I still think the Crows have a massive point to prove, and I think their core talent is more dangerous without Tom Mitchell than Hawthorn's.
I think Adelaide is an easy tip here.
Really?
They're playing at home. And they're
Adelaide's playing at home.
And they're quite a better team. So okay. I think the Crows should win quite comfortably.
Easy tip then, the Crows.
A misprint on the by the producer.
Maybe not comfortably, but I think they're definitely the favourites firmly.
Okay.
With a player retiring, he now gets a cup named after him. The Shane Biggs Cup between the Western Bulldogs and the Sydney Swans at... a right honour for a loved son of both clubs.
Yeah, I think the Dogs win. And I'm sort of weird that I say that because I just don't really...
It's a good
think,
upset.
I don't really think the Swans are much.
I don't think they're much. I don't think they're going to play finals, but I also don't think they're bottom six level. I still think they're in the mix.
I'll pick one upset a week and this is my upset.
A lot will depend on whether Buddy plays.
Yeah, is he going to play?
Oh,
I'd be surprised if he's not out there.
I think he's more likely to play than not, but the Bulldogs' mail is... that at the time of the podcast, that he's highly unlikely to play. That's what the Bulldogs are thinking.
Right, okay.
So I'm going to take from that what you will.
I'm going to tip the Swans.
The Brisbane Lions commence their 2019 campaign against the West Coast Eagles at the Gabba. This is for the, that's a misprint. I think the Brent Staker Cup for the Brisbane Lions.
AFLW coach.
Did you do this off the top of your head just then?
Yeah, I did, yes.
I'm going for West Coast.
AFLW coach, Brent Staker.
Yes, Brent Staker. Yes, assistant coach. Doing
apologies.
With Daniel Merritt as well, doing some nice things, the source.
West Coast, I think, will win this.
Right.
This is an upset watch game, isn't
potentially,
it?
Potentially, yeah.
If we think the Lions can be as good as they can be, playing at home, they played some teams close up there last year, almost beat Adelaide up there.
If you speak to people at Melbourne and ask them about Brisbane.
And I don't.
Yeah, I did. They don't just say, oh, the Brisbane Lions are going to be good in a couple of years' time. They reckon they're going to be good now. They reckon they've arrived. The Lions in the JLT, they turned a few heads.
But don't think of Brisbane as a 5-win team. They were as good as an 8-win team.
Yeah.
Well,
they halved their losing margin.
Yeah. So can you imagine an 8-win team jumping up and beating a top 4 contender?
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, sure you can. I'll tip the Lions and probably be wrong, but I'll tip them.
You're tipping the Lions?
Yeah.
Going out on a limb. You going to buy a membership if they win?
I'm biased.
You going to buy a membership if they win?
No. Okay. I'm very stingy with my money.
They're a good team to watch the Lions, aren't they, Tom?
I've heard that.
The Giants host the Essendon Football Club. Now, we've made an exception
all
here.
Of them.
This is for the Dylan Sheil Cup. Sheil playing against his old side for the first time. We saw some good signs from Dylan Sheil during the JLT series, but overall his team weren't very convincing. How much do you read into that?
A lot. I think Essendon could potentially miss the eight.
Right.
I'm not going to select them in my eight.
No Danaher, no Hooker.
Yeah. Zach Merritt's a little bit underdone. I'm going for the Giants in this one.
I read nothing into their JLT form.
Right.
I think if you look back at Essendon last year, there were two Essendons. There was the 2-5 side in the first 7 rounds. Then there was the Carlton game, which they lost but played well in and played a style of footy that was going to change because 2 days later, Mark Neild left the club.
Yes. Tom broke that.
And then they went 10-4. For the rest of the season after that. After that point, they were a finals-worthy team. And that was the real Essendon last year. I think they should... This is why I think they'll make the eight.
How can you trust a bipolar person? That's effectively what you're doing here.
You're ascribing a personality to a group of football players.
Essendon were bipolar last year. They had two different personalities.
Well, yes,
and now you're trusting them this year to have one.
But they did not swing between the two, and you can ascribe reasons as to why they played much better after that Carlton game.
So, Maxi, you're thinking that they're going to carry the second half of the season form right through this season?
I think because if you look at the ladder, they were a 12-10 team and just outside the eight. But I think, really, they were a team probably good enough to win 14-15.
On paper, this team is capable of eventually finishing the top four. There's teams better than them this year, but they should be aiming for the top eight. I think a pass mark for them is a top eight, really.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I think top six probably is their pass mark.
But I'm tipping GWS.
And the last game, for the Winston Abraham Cup.
Mark of the year.
Speaking of Canberra, just before, I knew you'd bring that up.
Yeah, I love that mark. On the point post.
The Dockers hosting the Kangaroos at Optus Stadium.
Freo, for me, at home.
Fremantle is bad. North Melbourne. No one likes North Melbourne for some reason. North Melbourne isn't sexy. It's not fun to tip North Melbourne to make the
eight. I think no one dislikes North Melbourne.
Yeah, that's sort of what I mean. No one has an opinion on North Melbourne, and they're just like, they'll finish 11th.
A bit vanilla.
It's North.
I like the depth of North Melbourne's list this season. I think they're putting their best 22 together was quite a tough task.
They finished ninth, and they added some good players.
Yep.
Not again, players who fit the rest of the club, really. Jared Polek and Aaron Hall, players Pittard, that the stats like, but the wider public would not. I like North.
Dom Tyson.
Dom Tyson might be a handy recruit.
Yeah, yes. I think Dom Tyson's a good recruit, actually. Yes. He's exactly what they needed, and he's now at his third AFL club. I think he's well settled, or he's well placed to become a good AFL player at North.
Watch out for Bailey Scott as well. Big chance to debut.
Is he?
Son of Robert.
I'm very ready for North to make the eight, having not tipped it.
They looked good at the yo-yo test in November, so I'm tipping Freo.
You did okay that day, didn't you, Tom? Who did you beat in the yo-yo test at North Melbourne?
I beat Ben Cunnington.
Oh, sorry, just picked that name off the floor.
And a few other bigger guys and the older guys. But
not really known as a runner, Ben Cunnington.
No, he's a lot better ball winner than I am.
You win none.
Yeah, and he's won two best and fairest.
And you've won none.
But you recently...
At North Melbourne.
But didn't you recently...
True.
Recently, didn't you win a premiership?
Yeah, Old Melbourne's cricket club won a flag against Scotch.
How exactly? Please remind us of how
we
you
don't
won
have
that
time.
Game.
That's all we have time for on the Fox Footy podcast. Stick back to foxfooty.com.au.